Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Hello again, Yad A. Greetings. This is Vinaya Yazi from Native Voices of the Four Corners. And today we have a special guest, Areta Begay, who is the director of Dinehbe'ina, an organization out of Shiprock, New Mexico, on the northern region of the Navajo Nation. How are you doing today, Areta?
Hi, good morning, Vinaya. Thank you for having me this morning. I'm doing pretty good this morning.
Great. I guess you blew in with the wind from Shiprock.
Yeah, it's been very windy lately, and we've been experiencing a lot of that spring weather. There are a lot of fluctuations with cold and hot temperatures. So.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's a good time to be inside doing artwork
or
some kind of creative activity.
Oh, yeah. That's what we've been doing exactly.
Yeah. So do you want to introduce yourself to the public and get an idea of who Areta is?
Yeah. Happy to. Yeah, I've been on also. She a Areta Begay initiate. Is a son a nishlin a shihin bashishin tachini dash a chedo. Bit ani a dash a nalin late isnas basto a isi na shadon le. Not only nez de you see additional sato director and shon a de nepe in now liao a banashish a called the pedo the net catcher the at ohigi a you see bitten dashin sto the bedded ozigi a benache ben not need you know a banake. And I'll go ahead and translate that in English. My name is Areta Begay. I'm currently from Tisnesmas, Arizona. And I serve as the executive director for the nonprofit organization called Dinehbe'ina. And we work with a lot of Navajo Churro sheep producers. We work with a lot of Navajo weavers. And our primary mission is to educate people about sheep and wool.
Okay, great. Thank you for that really awesome introduction. It gives our audience a chance to hear the Navajo language, which a lot of times we don't always get to hear here in the town Farmington area. But I think once you go past the Navajo reservation boundaries, you hear more of a lot of the language out in the community. So thank you, Kia Areta. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Dinehbe'ina, the Sheep is Life organization. And I think it's an integral part of our community now because it really helps to seem to bring together the weavers and the producers of wool and the processors of wool, which is a whole art form in itself. And mm-hmm. I'm really interested in that idea of how Navajo people engulf themselves in the process of art. And for weavers, it's very unique. It's very special. Can you talk a little bit about the weavers that come to the program or that are a part of this organization?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. A lot of our members and artists and weavers and even shepherds alike approach our organization mainly starting out as volunteers or they have a curiosity about the work that we're doing. Most likely we reach a lot of our members through free events and spin-off groups that we do across the reservation. But before the pandemic had started, we used to have a little over six different spin-off groups across the reservation. But since the pandemic had started, we actually had to put it on hold or defer the program until it was safe to gather again in small groups. So we're slowly starting that program back up, but a lot of our work has been done virtually and just through media, social media outreach. So a lot of them approach us just because they may have been taught in their family home, their parents, their grandparents, or somebody in their family is either a fiber artist of some sort. Maybe they dabble in Navajo weaving. Maybe it's horse cinch weaving. Maybe it's sash belt weaving. Maybe it's moccasin. Maybe it's beadwork. Whatever it is. Some of them approach us because they are not familiar with the raw wool processing all the way, all the different steps that go into making it into a yarn or eventually into a Navajo weaving. So a lot of them approach us just to kind of get familiar with that process again. And some of them have seen the processes, but they've never done it hands-on. Mm-hmm. So that's where we get volunteers that will sometimes approach us and say, hey, I'd like to give it a shot. Can we come into your office and try wool washing on your next wool wash day? Or let's card or spin. You know, I have spinning tools, or I've had these carding paddles that were passed down from my mother or grandmother, but I don't know how to use them. How can I, you know, figure out how to use them? Can I come by and have someone teach me? So those are how people, you know, approach us and connect with us. And then from there, once they get familiar with some of our programs and events, seasonal events, then they have the ability to attend, and they have, sometimes if they're brave enough, they'll become presenters themselves and eventually become the mentor to the next new incoming group that is interested in learning all about wool processing or weaving or other forms of fiber art.
You know, weaving itself is a very different way of doing art than, say, painting, because painting seems to be more of like a solo participation event, mm-hmm. where you're just painting by yourself, unless you, of course, decide to paint with other painters. But with weaving, I think it traditionally it's always been like a communal event. It has always evolved around the grandmother or the matriarch of the family. And then from there, she kind of radiates her, you know, her special aura that she has, because, you know, then people want to help her, like mm-hmm. the little kids mm-hmm. may want to help her,
right,
as she's, you know, balling up her wool, or, you know, holding the wool while she's spinning it, you know. And then maybe her daughter might want to help, you know, doing carding. And then, you know, so it always almost becomes like a gratitude event. I've always noticed that, you know, weaving, like myself, I have weavers in my family, and you see grandma or, you know, your auntie, and you're like, oh, I want to help them, you know. So you sit there mm-hmm. for a while and you mm-hmm. talk to them. And I think that's a great thing about this organization that I've seen with my own eyes, how yeah. it really brings people to communicate. And mm-hmm. either in English or Navajo, you have these bilingual speakers who are sharing cultural knowledge. And mm-hmm. I think it's very, very interesting in that aspect. So with that knowledge that we have now, Retta, can you tell us a little bit about what is your role you play, not just as a director, but like your artistic role? What is your creative way that you participate in this organization?
Oh, since I've been involved with the organization a little over 10 years ago, I actually started learning the triangle loom weaving there, you know, for unknown reasons why I just suddenly dove into triangle loom weaving. I think it's just the curiosity of the looming, like the warping and the weft process is slightly different than you would do in Navajo weaving. So that's how I remember getting involved with the organization. So in my earliest days, that was kind of the thing that I was doing. And then from there, I transitioned into making Navajo twill weavings. So I was doing saddle blanket twills using the diamond twill pattern. And then from there, I'm doing a lot of felting. I absolutely love wet felting. And I use a lot of Navajo Churro wool and just natural fibers to incorporate into the different felt that whatever takes shape. Sometimes I'm fascinated with colors and textures, and I'll make them into little coin bags, paw holders, or, you know, utilitarian pieces into the kitchen, or however way I think creatively about things.
Yeah, I've seen some of your felt work and some other Navajo weavers too with your organization, but I don't really understand like what is felting. Can you tell us a little bit more about felting, and is it like strictly a Navajo technique, or for those of us who don't know exactly what felting is, can you give us a little bit more information?
Sure. Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about felting. Felting is basically the process of tangling wool. You're teasing wool and putting it into a form. When I say form, it could be inside a cake pan, it can be inside a cookie sheet thing, and you can make sheets of it, or you can make it into a specific shape. But you're basically just using water and dish soap or gentle soap. Some people have used bar soap or locally made soaps, basically soaps that don't have a lot of chemicals or specifically phosphate. Phosphate does not allow any felting, so I always, when I teach felting, I always tell people don't use phosphate soap. Use phosphate-free soap. A lot of times what you do is, I dive into wet felting a lot. There's different forms of felting. There's wet resist felting, and then there's also needle felting. So felting is basically just felting pieces of loose wool and putting it in layers in kind of like a plaid design, where one layer, you use carded wool, first of all, and you make sure that they're all layered in one direction, and then you layer a second layer in the opposite, a vertical or horizontal direction. So their layers are always a vertical and horizontal. And you make several layers to create a specific thickness that you want. And then from there, you can start adding a screen or bubble wrap on there, and you soak the wool, that the layers of wool that you just made, and then you dump water on it. You use hot and cold water to shock the fiber so that they can felt quicker. And throughout the whole entire process, you basically just switch on and off until you feel the firmness of the wool. And when they mesh together, you'll obviously notice some sort of felted item. So there's different ways. I've been dealing a lot with wet felting lately just to make hot pads. Anything to do with like bags or things that open up, those are called wet resist felting. You have to insert either like a form, like a plastic form, or I think kids use them in their schools, those little foam sheets for art or something like that. Well, anyway, if you want to make a bag, you just create a square, you insert the square in the middle between one of the layers, and then you add layers again on top, and then you just wet both ends, and then you work both sides by just gently rubbing using soap and water. So that creates a purse or any type of little bags. I've seen people use it for shoes. You can felt hats this way. So that's called wet resist felting. And then the other form of felting is the needle felting technique. And that is basically using just a barbed needle. And there's different gauges for those needles. And those needles basically get stabbed into a specific like bunch of wool. You could turn it into a ball to form a shape. Like if you're going to make an animal, for example, like a sheep, you just create a ball of raw wool that's carded or loose. It doesn't have to necessarily be carded, but it's always nice to work with carded wool. But you basically ball it in your hand, and then you start stabbing the needle gently into the wool, and the barb needle does all the work for you. It just tangles the wool as you're pushing the wool in and out, and it creates this really tangled, fiber inside the ball, and then soon you'll notice it starts to felt, and it creates this really nice little ball. And then from there, you can do little embellishments with colored roving or any type of dyed yarn or wool that you have laying around, and you just start embellishing pieces to it to create whatever item that you're making.
That's really, really cool. I'm trying to visualize that, and I think I've seen somebody do that where they made like a little kind of like an animal, maybe it looks like a sheep or a cat,
right?
Yeah, they're really cute and they're really lightweight, you know. Mm-hmm. That is a little bit different than weaving, as you know, especially like making rug and you're doing felting, you know. And is it a new technique that Navajo people are doing, or is it just specific to like Dene Be'ina, or like how do you think that became adopted into the new Navajo weavers world? You know, because I know not everybody does felting, but I know a lot of Navajos do.
Well, interestingly enough, I've been involved with the organization over the past 10 years, and that's where I picked up felting within the organization. The organization's mission has always been trying to encourage youth to pick up fiber art of any form to eventually get them motivated to try a Navajo weaving. Because we know that a lot of younger students or a lot of younger generations that are trying to dabble with fiber art of any kind, we usually try to get them interested in projects that take very little to no time and like under 1 hour completion. Mm-hmm. So felting is one of the great ways of getting them involved. And when they get involved, then they feel that success, or they feel that motivation to continue and say, oh, what else can I create with wool? And then we give those options and say, hey, you've tried felting. Okay, great. Now let's see if we can start like something small over here. We've had cardboard loom kits. We had a board member 1 year teaching cardboard weaving, and you turned the cardboard weaving into a purse. So it was in like a Navajo woven bag or something like that. And it was really nice. It came out really nice. And those are like introductory steps for anyone actually to go and take a step further into the fiber world. I don't necessarily view it as something new. I know that felting, in terms of history, it's been around for quite a while worldwide. I don't know extensive history into felting, but I do know that the Tibetans and some of the nomadic peoples in Mongolia actually started their earliest form of felting because they used the yurts as their mobile homes that they take down, and they just basically roll up large sheets of felt. And I was told that once upon a time, they actually, I don't know if they still do it today, but they would roll large sheets of felt and put it like in a large tarp-like thing. And they, because they're a horse riding culture as well, they would roll it up in that tarp and keep the loose wool in there and just make sure there's a layer on top and a layer on the bottom, and roll it up, and then they would just tie it, and they tie it to the back of the horse, and they would ride horses all day. In the meantime, the bundle is behind the horse and is bouncing around all over the place, and it would felt. So that's how they used to create sheets. So when it felts, when it, at the end of the day, you know, they'd probably check on it, and I'm sure they work to fix the little parts of it or whatever that needs a little bit more layers or something. But eventually what they do is they take it off and they unroll it and then try to figure out how to turn those into walls for the yurt. From my understanding, they piece several sheets of it together, and then eventually it becomes this huge big yurt that you can roll up, and you can actually carry around rolls of it, and that includes the roof. The roof would be like in a weird little shape that just rolls up, and you just toss it on. Kind of like a hogan, a Navajo earthen hogan, but the same concept, but it's just with wool. So that's where the felting of history, one of the histories of felting comes from. And as far as I know, all over the U.S., there's so many different fiber art classes, workshops. A lot of businesses and fiber art organizations really dive into felting. So I know there's a huge popularity movement behind it. And if you go to Facebook, you'll find a lot of groups on felting as well. So I'm members of numerous of those Facebook groups. So I do love watching other fiber artists across the U.S. create different things of art. And that's where some of my creativity comes. But through our organization, what we do is we just try to get people introduced to other fiber art so that they can make a step towards that Navajo weaving, or whatever the first steps of accomplishing some of their first weavings. So that's what we provide. It's just a motivation for younger folks, or even adults. You know, it's not just for young kids. It's made for adults. So we've had seniors come to our office several years ago before the pandemic had started, and we actually had them work with wool, and they were felting Christmas ornaments for us. They were making all types of stuff, and they're really easy to work with. I mean, any type of wool can be made into felt in under 5 minutes if you do small little balls.
That's really great to hear a history of global communities felting, you know, and then I always say everybody ends up in the Four Corners at some point, usually coming through Farmington or Shiprock or even Cortez, and they all have a story, right? And I think it's nice to hear that people are still doing these pretty much ancient techniques of felting or weaving. And then you talked about the people in Tibet and Mongolia. And I have seen images of the yurts, and they really do look like hogans, and they're just more mobile than our hogans, which are usually made of wood and earth, mud. That's really interesting, because I think the process of art is really important for us. You know, even though people like yourself might work in a supervisor or a an organizer capacity, you're still a creative person, you're still an artist. And sometimes, you know, people say like, I need to have a vacation, I need to get stress relief, I need to decompress. But I think for a lot of Navajo artists specifically, I feel like our art is our way of decompressing. It's our way of finding a balance in life, right? Like kind of like what Navajos call hojong. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's a beauty way thing. Like, so we know that we're balanced, mental, spiritual, physical, and we feel good. And I think for us, it seems like our art helps us do that. Would you agree with that? Like in your own personal life? And then maybe just like what you've seen with people right. who come to your organization. How does the art process work in Navajo?
Well, I have a lot of experience in observing, working with elders, and in my own family, I have elders that have taught Navajo weaving or basketry. I come from a family of basket makers and weavers, and modern day art. I have cousins that dabble in all sorts of other art. So, but just from my observation, I know that. Whether Navajos are traditional or non-traditional, I know that when you observe them, and when I work with other weavers and other families and members who approach me and ask specific questions about learning about art, it's so funny how our approach to life and our philosophy around what you call hajon or any of these other nahata and they call, I guess you could say that the idea of where you conceive the idea, where you want to make something, is always associated with the East. And our hogan also has that same resemblance where the opening is always to the East. And I was always told that, you know, our thoughts go in a circle, and the idea of creating that idea for an art also follows that same circular pattern. I know that every direction is sacred and affiliated with our way of thought. And, you know, some of the final steps is always involving reflection and learning and being at peace with what you made, no matter what the mistakes may be. So just, you know, I'm still learning as I go. It's a lifetime to learn a lot of these traditional and cultural teachings that they our ancestors and our people know about. I know that you can't learn one thing in one day, and you go through a lot of emotions and processes just to accomplish what you really want to master, right? So I know a lot of artists kind of go through that. And when I say whether Navajos are traditional or non-traditional, I always see them go through those phases. And I always tell people, our Navajo cultural and spirituality is not a religion. It's just a way of life. It's something that I think it's a Western idea or concept that was just kind of forced upon us that we are religion. We are our own, you know, whatever it is that they want to label us. But I feel that it's just a way of life, because the words that we speak, anything that we say, always has a connection back to earth. It always references plants. It represents places, name-based places or something like that, and mountains and animals, and always connected to some sort of spiritual or ceremony that may be long gone or forgotten about. I know there's very few practiced today. And I know Navajo weaving and shepherding and being an artist are also connected to all in that same realm. So when Navajos want to learn something new, sometimes they're always taught, you know, give something back when you learn something. If you take something from the earth, give something back. There's always that relationship where we offer something back. If someone has taught you weaving, you know, reciprocate that. And kind of like, you know, those sayings where you give something back to someone and do something good. So it's the same way. And the concept is just so that your idea, your artistic abilities flourish. It's so that you don't feel blocked or you don't feel cornered. So that's for those reasons why our hogans are always circular. It's the idea to not get cornered, and it's the idea so that you don't feel trapped in your own art. And that's for those reasons why Navajo weavers always have exit lines in their weavings. So there's a lot of teachings that go into all of that. But I always tell people, if you really want to dabble into, or you're learning more about the spirituality behind sheep weaving and wool, you know, go to your respective traditional practitioners or medicine man, medicine women. There's a few out there that can tell you and elaborate, you know, with what you need to know. So anyway, those are just some of my observations that I see. And it's just something that I think is very... Artists take a very sacred approach. Your mind goes into all of the work that you're doing. Your hands work and your thoughts go into it. You know, sometimes your sweat, your tears go into it as well. You know, you feel that frustration. Sometimes you may hit a wall, but that circular thought has always taught us to keep moving forward and keep going in a circular path, and you know, and go back to the idea in the East, so you can generate another idea if you feel stuck. So, and then you know, and it eventually takes its steps back towards the East, West, and North, where your reflection and being at peace with your art ends, and then you restart a new idea, like rebirth.
Yeah, it's you know, when you really look at our Navajo culture and our teachings, it's so. We always use the word sacred, but it's very complex. And it really, when you really think about it and learn about it and consciously, you know, look for those teachings, then it's almost like you get healed. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but you, it's something that you feel like, I already know, I knew this, but I know I can feel it in my being. Like, this is so familiar, almost like, there's a word that they use, I can't think of it right now, but where you remember this moment, you're like, I've lived this moment before. That's what I was thinking about when you were talking about that, Aretta, because yeah, art creation is very much a part of our own life ways as Navajos, you know, because everything we do, and even speaking the language, we're still creating creation, not us creating it, but we're helping to help it sort of unwrap. I always tell people, when people speak Navajo language, it's to our understanding, how we understand language, it's a verb language. It's verb oriented. So it's in the process. It's an active language. It's not a dead language. So I think it's important, you know, when we talk about these things as they're related to the art, art process, and then also the knowledge, the cultural knowledge, the spiritual knowledge. It's all important part of this. A lot of times the public just sees the final thing, which is a rug.
Right.
And then the way they're labeled, like Two Gray Hills and, you know, Eye Dazzle, all those names, which, you know, a lot of times I think doesn't really matter to the weaver. They're just making things that they feel in their being, and it comes out and manifests into this linear or, you know, round, angled, whatever it may be, shape in the art piece itself. And so, you know, we as Navajos will never lose. I really feel like we won't lose that idea of art creation, because it's just in our blood. And I think it's important that organizations like the one you're coming from, Diné Be'ina, a very integral part of our Navajo culture. You know, and Navajo Nation is very large. And so we're located here in the north part of the Navajo Nation. It's great that you have that organization to help lead the people and the new generations, and especially to kind of heal from this past pandemic we've been through. And I'm just really happy that you're there, Aretta, doing this, and that you have so much knowledge to share, and that you're also willing to learn, it sounds like. I'm just so grateful that you're here, and I will definitely be looking you up. And for those people who are listening, if you're interested in this, I'm pretty sure it's welcome to, is it open to anybody?
Yeah, our nonprofit offers a lot of free events, and people can actually sign up on our volunteer, get involved tab on our website, and you'll see a drop-down link. It says volunteer, you can sign up anytime. Currently, we have two volunteer opportunities. One is at the Shape is Life Festival, which is June 17th at the Navajo Nation Museum from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can pre-register just to attend. And it's free. We don't charge anything. But we'll be demonstrating anything from the raw wool all the way to making into yarn or weaving. It's just for families to come, or if you just have a curiosity about Navajo weaving itself, or just working with raw wool, you're welcome to come. Just sign up and somebody will email you back and get back with you. our website for our organization is Navajo, www.navajolifeway.org. And there's another tab on the homepage. It says Sheep is Life. You can actually click on that, and it'll give you several information and links to how you can get involved with our organization.
Okay, nice, Aretta. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And for those of you who'd like to be a part of that, please look up that information. And next time we see a Navajo rug, we can kind of think about Aretta. And, you know, she told us kind of a little about the process of it and the reasoning behind why Navajos make these rugs. So that is going to be it for this time for Native Voices of the Four Corners. This is me, Vinaya Yazzi, and thank you, Aretta Begay. I hope you have a great day, and good luck with the new events coming up in 2022.
All right. Thank you for having me, Vinaya. Have a wonderful day.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.